Hello, hello guys.
Hi. Hi everybody, and welcome to another episode of Today Uncovered. I'm so glad that you guys are back here. And how amazing is this? We are getting more regular. Can I get a whoop whoop? No? Okay, that's cool. I will cheer myself on. Right, guys, it's February and it is Black History Month in the United States of America. And in honor of my wonderful listeners from the States, I decided to just do something on the topic of Black history, you know? Just be a bit relevant and just to hear of a young entrepreneur's journey in the States. And then we also took the opportunity to chat about some really inspirational figures in Black history and just within the Black community, and also some of the issues that are going on, including some of the issues that have come to the forefront during COVID. So if you want to hear about some of the things we got chatting about, make sure you stay tuned, and I want to hear your comments and your views after. Hello.
Hi, hello.
Hi, Ahinkra.
Hi, Amy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Lovely. It's good to have you. Thanks for making the time.
Thank you.
Lovely. So we are on Today Uncovered. Right. It's fine. I'm going to edit this part out because I need to get my notes up. And I was about to blag it. Okay, cool. Let's start again.
Okay.
Hello. Hi, I don't like that. Okay, sorry. It's been a while. Start again. Hi, Ahinkra. How are you doing?
Hi, Amy. I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, not bad. Excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for making time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a blessing to, you know, reconnect with you and also to be a part of your show. And I'm excited to be here.
Lovely. That's one word I'm going to take, excited, because I know our conversations are always really juicy. So yes. I'm looking forward to where this, what rabbit trail will end up in today. Absolutely. Now, Ahinkra, can you introduce yourself to my guests? Because I have known you for a very long time.
Yes.
And they have no idea. Some may. But some have an idea of who you are. So could you just give them a little intro?
Okay, so just a quick intro on me. My name is Nana Kwame Ahinkra Tichi Maika. I was born and raised in Ghana and moved to the US in 2010, to attend uni. And I found a passion for food and realized there was underrepresentation in the African segment of the grocery store and the specialty food industry. And so I wanted to start a business change the gap in the market, to address the gap in the market for African food products in grocery stores. And just to your viewers, I've known you since 1998 or 99.
Oh my God.
We go way back in Richard school. We didn't know each other till I think after high school. You were still in high school, and we were both still in high school, and that's how long we've known each other, and we reconnected and became very good friends. And so glad to be a part of the show. So I'm an entrepreneur, and also work in corporate America at the same time, and married to a wonderful wife named Natasha Tichi Maika.
Lovely. And guys, if you can drop in the comments a congratulations to Ahinkra and his beautiful wife, because they've recently celebrated their wedding anniversary. So
thank you.
That's lovely. So you said, actually, do you know, I haven't, do you, what does Ahinkra actually mean?
So henkra basically means servant of a king, or henekra, or you could also say the soul of a king or a servant of a king. And I took the meaning to mean child of God because I'm a Christian. So I take the meaning to mean child of God. And of course, Kwame, my dad is a Fanti, and I was born on Saturday. So, and Nana, obviously, because I was named after my grandfather, who's Ahenkra. So Nana Ahenkra, Nana Kwame Ahenkra, basically.
Lovely. Yeah, I just as you were saying your full name, because obviously I call you Ahinkra, I was like, I've never actually found out what Ahinkra means because it's not a very common name. I haven't
I
come.
agree. I agree. We're few and far between.
Lovely. So thank you so much for introducing yourself to my wonderful guest, to my wonderful listeners. You guys aren't guests, you're family. And yes, when Ahinkra said he's known me since 1990, I didn't even know where he was going. But as soon as I heard 1990, I felt so old.
1999, yeah. We're getting up there. Yeah.
Jeez. We're maturing. Like
We're
finance.
maturing, yeah.
But yeah, it has been a long journey, and you're based in the United States at the moment, aren't you?
Currently, yes, I am.
Okay. So I just want to delve a bit more into your entrepreneurial ventures. You said you saw a gap in the market. Can you tell me a bit more about that, and what is it that you actually do?
Yeah, so we manufacture what we call the traditional Ghanaian or African tomato-based stew, and we market it as a marinade for meats and chicken, because obviously this is the American market. So sort of like aligning the brand, Ghana Supreme Sauce marinade, aligning the brand to the US market so they understand, because if you market it as a stew, people will probably be confused. And the gap in the market came from the fact that you go to a grocery store and you see Asian, like there's the soy sauce, there's a teriyaki sauce, there's Italian pastas, there's Mexican salsas, but there was no place for African food products, even in the largest retailers like Walmart and so on and so forth. There was this huge gap. They were non-existent. And although there are people in the United States and in the UK who make shito and they sell it in certain stores, I understand you can even nowadays you can even find shito in certain Costcos. And back in 2010, 2011, it really was not the case. But usually when you've found those type of products in this part of the world, you would normally find them catering to just the African or Ghanaian community. And I wanted to change that by sharing our food to all the communities across the UK and the United States and different foodie segments of people, because people like food regardless of their culture, and people are willing to try things, new things.
100%. I love that, and that's a very wise way as well of entering the market, I think, because sometimes being Africans, we love to say, no, this is stew, and we call it stew, and we're not willing to shift on certain things, but just by a simple change in name, calling it a marinade, but not necessarily changing what goes into it, you're able to open up your customer base and have a whole brand coming out of that. So I applaud you for that.
Thank you, Amy.
So what stores have you been in so far then?
So currently we are in Giant Eagle Market District. Giant Eagle is a big corporation store, and we are in some of their market district locations. And then Amazon is a global retailer. It's available in Amazon. You can order from any parts of the world. And also on our website, we're currently in close to 60 individual grocery stores, but selling it on our website and being able to ship globally allows anybody from no matter what part of the world you live in, access to our products. So we ship to the UK, we ship to, Switzerland and other parts of the UK, and a part of Europe, I'm sorry, and of course, throughout the United States.
Wow, okay. I'm learning stuff as well. I'm a bit ashamed to say I didn't actually know that you shipped to the UK, but I'm glad I now know that.
You're
So
not too
we
late to the
can
party because we started this year. You're not too late to the party because we only started this year.
Okay. That's fine. That's fine. No, that's okay. I'm excited and I will be order because I've been seeing so many posts on social media and I'm like, when are these guys coming over here? It would be great to have you in stores, but thank God for Amazon. We don't have to wait till then.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, and what's I don't know, what's the challenge? Because you did mention that you're working well in corporate America. We don't have to delve too much into that, but it'd be interesting to know what you were doing and how you managed to balance it with your entrepreneurial endeavors.
Endeavors, yeah. So it's obviously very physically tasking because it requires long hours of work because it seems like there's never really a break. So that is definitely challenging. I work a unique schedule in corporate America where I work 2 to 11, 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. And so I have the entire mornings dedicated to making sure that our customers receive our product in the Amazon warehouse. So we do a lot of shipments, and then we handle a lot of orders for people who order online, and also for our local supply, our local customers' grocery stores in Ohio and other places. So it is very I would say time consuming and demanding, but when you love what you do, you really don't look at it as work. That's the way I've experienced it so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite inspiring as well because I'm assuming you're working around the clock pretty much. Because if you're working from 2 to 11 on a corporate role, that leave much time before and after
Yes.
anything else. So what motivates
Absolutely.
you to keep going then?
You
Inspiration?
know, the passion for what we do, and I guess the passion for food is what is triggering this motivation.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Now, I would love to know because people, my audience, some of my audience are also Ghanaians, and they're wondering what makes this so different? Why would I buy Supreme Sauce as opposed to making my own tomato-based stew at home?
Well, you'd buy Supreme Sauce because it's a pre-made tomato-based stew that would help you save time as far as cooking is concerned. If you work around the clock like I do, and you have a very busy life, you might probably have to you may probably only have downtime during the weekends to cook. And usually when we cook, well, my wife and I cook, we cook for the entire week. And so you need a product whereby there's very little time spent in cooking food. So if it's like beef stew or if it's chicken stew, for instance, you would have to season it. You would chop up some onions. Once it's steamed, and you drain the water and then add the supreme sauce and stir and let it cook for about 15 minutes. Let the sauce seep into the chicken. And so these are ways in which we need to live life more efficiently, I'd say, and not dedicating too much time into cooking when our lives might be so busy. And that's why somebody would purchase Supreme Sauce as opposed to making it themselves, because time is money, Amy.
100%. I feel that. I mean, I've recently had a little boy, and I'm with you and your wife on that, like cooking for the week. That's exactly what we do in this household. As a matter of fact, guys, it's Sunday evening here in the UK, and I've just come up from cooking. My husband and I were actually cooking for the week in the kitchen before this call, and it will be amazing just to have that base ready. No need to chop tomatoes, no need to chop all the other stuff, and just be able to pour some stuff in and half the time, because time is money. And yeah, I can totally get that. So Supreme Sauce, guys, on Amazon, make sure you go check it out. Life changer. Definitely. Right. Now, we were talking, and my listeners know this as well. This show is very much twofold, and one of the reasons I had you on here is to inspire people to do what they may seem as little, or may seem to them as little, to do what's in their hearts to do. The whole idea that the world needs everyone. There's something unique that every single person has to offer to the world, hence their existence. And I love to bring people on the show who are doing amazing things that are influencing their sphere of life. And that's why I had you on here. Now, one thing I don't want to fool people is into believing is that it's all rosy, right? It is
No.
a journey and nothing is easy. So can you kind of just tell us a bit about your business journey and some of the hiccups you may have had along the way running a business, and how you overcome that?
Well, first of all, we've made a lot of mistakes, but we've also done a lot of right things along the way. I'll tell you a quick story. We 1 year into our business, when we first got on the market, we got into our first grocery store chain. It was a very proud moment. It was like almost 30 stores and just one account, and they had 30 stores. So it was a very huge opportunity for me. And like a young man, from Ghana, and I was barely 25 at the time, to have such a huge opportunity, at my disposal to sell my product in their stores. And so life happened, and I was initially on a student visa, which was about to end, and so I had to obviously go back to Ghana, and so I had to employ people to run it for me, and but unfortunately, I was we lost the account. I was heavily involved, although I was in Ghana, but we didn't market and push our product the right way. We didn't market and push it hard enough to succeed in keeping that account, and we lost it, unfortunately. So no, business is not always rosy, and you have moments where you would find it reasonable to quit, and I mean, many businesses even last 2 years, and we've been around for over 5 years. So just the fact that, just the fact that you put so much time and effort and passion into it, and all you put all your emotions into it, could even crush you when things go wrong. But I don't think making mistakes should cause somebody to just give up and pack up and call it quits. But that was, I'd say, that was probably the biggest mistake we ever made, in the way we went about it, and we learned from it. That's the most important part, learning from it.
Wow, that must have been a big blow, especially not being on the ground, try and kind of mop things up yourself. Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that. I'm glad you guys have made a massive turnaround since then. And I love what you just said. The most important thing is to learn from it, isn't it? Now, in light of that, what kind of tips would you give to young startups, perhaps young black boys like you, all around the world? Because I speak to quite a few youth. And a lot of them say, no, I want to be a businessman. No, I want to run my own business. I mean, where do they start from? What would you say to them?
I'll say they should find something they really like and they're really passionate and good at. That's the first step you should take. And the second part is doing research on the market to find out if it really makes sense to actually be in this business, because you may have a passion for something, but you may not necessarily, you may not necessarily be in the position to succeed. And then the next part of it is when you identify that passion, you should also find a way to raise capital. And that's also one of the early lessons that we learn, like running out of cash. And when you have all these expenses, it's very easy for a business to be short on cash. And that's the beginning of the end for most businesses. So just make sure that you're capitalized. There are programs that will help you raise grants. There's crowdfunding. There is, there's so many things you can do to raise money for a business when you're starting up. But people should also identify your passion for it. And they should also see the potential in you and realize that you are good at what you're doing. So if you want to be a chef and you want a culinary business, they should have tried your food and believe, well, this guy's food is really good. This girl's food is really good. And I believe in her and I think she can do very well. And that's the advice I would give to somebody. Understand the market and also make sure that you have enough capital to operate a business.
That's so good. Like, that advice might seem really simple, but it is so good, because I think a lot of people may fall short on the last two points. So just to recap, the first thing was finding something you love, find something you're really passionate about. The second thing was make sure you research the market. And the third was make sure you have a way to maintain capital or just have capital around. But I feel a lot of people find something they love and stop there and hope that their love and passion for the said thing would make the business a success without actually doing the research into the market and finding out actually, is there a need for this? What is the need? How must I market it? Like what you learned as well, calling it a marinade as opposed to stew and just stuff like that. That's some good tips. Thank you. Really good tips. Right. So, I mean, we can't leave this conversation without going into current affairs. Because America has been on the map for the past, let's say, 12 months, right? Boy, have you guys invaded every news in the whole entire world. So, I mean, there's been so much going on in the world, right? There's been COVID. But I think COVID has also brought to light various injustices that were going on in the world. I think maybe the world took a standstill, you know, everything paused, and maybe people had enough time to listen and to see what was going on. And it's Black History Month as well.
It is.
In America, February. We had ours in October in the UK. But with it being Black History Month and with all the, you know, race riots and everything that's going on, I would love to ask, I mean, I can't leave here without asking what the climate is like as a young Black man in America.
Well, you know, right now, the climate is very, I'll call it strange to say the least, because as a young Black man in America now, as we speak today, everybody is almost walking on ice. You know, when you get pulled over by the police, you remember George Floyd, you know, you remember Eric Garner, you remember Tamir Rice, who actually was killed right here in Cleveland, you know, not too far away from here. And I know his family, his cousin is very, very good friends, is a very good friend of mine. We were in Ghana together recently, and we've had these discussions, and the climate is very, it's a very cold climate, literally, and also in terms of race issues and what has transpired over the last several months. And so you always want to make sure that you are doing certain things that will not potentially jeopardize your life, with every decision you make, making sure you're in the right place at the right time. And I feel like because of this global pandemic and many people getting out of the way, and not living the old normal, and we're in a new normal, I guess it also shelters us, and we are being sheltered by the pandemic. But when things go back to normal, you hope that we don't fall victim to circumstances that will that may be out of our control, like being pulled over and identified as the wrong person and potentially getting shot and killed.
Yeah. Well, that is one way of describing it, walking on ice. Yeah, that's quite an accurate description, because eventually the ice must melt, and like you said, we will go back to normal, and the prayer is that once things kind of ease down a bit, all this noise, as you may call it, has actually made a difference. Yeah, I mean, the whole world was shocked and still is shocked. I think it is a good kind of shock, because I think finally people are like, oh no, guys, this is what we've been trying to tell you. It hasn't been a ploy. But then on the other hand, I mean, what I've found in this time is, I think the experience of an African in the diaspora is a bit different to a native African American, if that makes sense. How do you see that statement? Do you agree? What would you have to say about that? And yeah, just delve into that a bit more for me.
Well, first of all, I feel the larger society perceives all of us as the same, and they don't, many may not necessarily care. If a police pulls you over, he sees a black man, he doesn't care if you grew up in Ghana and a Shawman man like I did, or you are from Cleveland, Ohio. What they see first is a black man. However, there has been some kind of growing perception of Africans living in the diaspora, and are perceived to have a certain type of work ethic, and so we are almost sheltered by the quote unquote negative model minority. Well, it's considered positive, but I don't think it's complementary. It's the model minority stereotype, whereby we are successful, or we try to be successful, or we can be successful, and then we are different from the others, which is the native born African Americans. But I don't agree with people who hold that view that we are different from that, because I believe in Pan-Africanism, and I believe we are all the same in the grand scheme of things. Some people have that perception, others don't. They still see a black man. But having said that, sometimes you are perceived differently, and so you might be treated a little differently in certain situations that may occur.
Yeah, thanks for just breaking that down and just explaining where some of those assumptions come from. But that's so true. I like what you said, because it's so true. When someone sees you don't necessarily have on your forehead where you came from, or they just see your color, isn't it? So, and before, as we saw with George Floyd, and as we've seen repeatedly in many instances, before you even get a chance to even say your name, let alone your genetic hereditary or whatever it is, you've already probably pinned to the ground, or whatever has happened to you. But in terms of how the different groups translate events, because I was having a few conversations with some friends as well, some who are African American, some who are African, some who are European, just a really open, honest conversation. And they brought my attention to something that was quite interesting and a line of thought that kind of piqued my interest, which was we actually may translate the events a bit differently. So I don't know if you get what I'm saying. So, for example, this idea. So I feel like Africans sometimes have this idea of, oh, I can always go back home. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I say, like, with African Americans, like, how would you feel if home was the place that was persecuting you? Do you know what I mean? So even though when someone may see me and you, if I was African and you weren't, they might see us differently. Sorry, they might see us the same. I may translate it a bit, the events that are happening to both of us a bit differently. So I'm not saying you'll be more frustrated or, you know, or less or anything. I don't know if you got what I'm saying. I'm just saying the intensity or the way in which it hurts, it hurts different. Do you know what I mean?
It does. And let's be honest. I mean, Amy, you know, we grew up in Ghana. I know you spent some time in the UK. I feel, you know, with the power structure and the way things operate in the West African environment, you know, we did not necessarily go through the same kind of oppression that an African American may have experienced growing up. I mean, you get pulled over by the police in Ghana, and he's black. So it's not necessarily a race issue at play. I mean, your president is black in Ghana. You go to the hospital, your doctor, your nurse, your physician assistant is all black. And and that alone is extremely empowering as a black person. It creates a certain level of confidence as opposed to an African-American where by, you know, the economy and everything seems to be controlled by, you know, a white society. And so that, you know, that may sometimes make you almost powerless, or not powerless per se, but not have a say so in the court system, you know, the justice system. You know, you not only is there a police brutality issue, there's also an injustice issue where, you know, police or, you know, killers who are white are often acquitted for murders of black people. And more often than not, it seems to be going not in our favor, but in their favor. But in Ghana, you don't necessarily, or growing up African on the continent, you don't necessarily have to go through that same, you don't have to go through that same struggle. Although we do have our own problems on the continent, you are going through a different struggle. So when you come to America, or when you go to the UK, you start to look at race from a different lens, because you become naive to the fact that oppression or racism exists until it happens to you. Then you start to understand why, you know, then it starts to make sense to you. And it's because we've been sheltered by the society, you know, growing up in a black society where, you know, race doesn't necessarily determine many things about you. You know, it may be your class sometimes, you know, or opportunity, but not necessarily race per se.
So true. That's so true. I remember even speaking to a few friends from the southern part of that continent. Obviously, there are a lot of maybe white South Africans and white Zimbabweans, and they found it very interesting when I said, because I just, like, we're just chatting. I was like, oh, no, there aren't that many white native Ghanaians. Or if that exists. And they were like,
if it exists.
You know, there might be people who have naturalized, obviously, and become Ghanaians, but not at the same rate that is in the southern part of the continent. So I found a shock that they found that a shock, because I was like, yeah, I mean, of course. So it is true. We have been very sheltered.
Yes.
extremely sheltered. Now, with in light of the current events, what would you say? I mean, there isn't a one thing would fix it all, but if you could recommend one thing to move us forward, the world forward, what would you say it could be?
Well, I would say Pan-Africanism is a way for us to move forward as a people in terms of working together as people of the African diaspora, and also of the people of, you know, the continent. And just to summarize what Pan-Africanism is, I mean, when it comes to Pan-Africanism, you don't necessarily see Ghanaian or Zimbabwean or South African or Black British or German British or Dutch British, because we identify each other as the same human family. And I think the solution to our problems, I feel, is to take control of our continent for the benefit of all our people across the diaspora. I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, everybody should move back to Africa. Now, we would like, you know, as many people as possible who in the diaspora to come home. But what I'm saying is that we need to start controlling our own oil refineries, our own gold mining. We need access to our banks, exclusivity for our people, for the benefit of our people. You know, I feel we need to be in the position where we are controlling our own destiny and not necessarily begging anybody from another nation or another race for our own survival. And we also need to be doing more than just producing raw materials. We should be manufacturing food. You know, agriculture is very important. We should be self-sufficient, and we should also be productive in our manufacturing, and also working and trading with each other will also, I feel, contribute to our prosperity. And I feel like solving the race issue in the diaspora, there was a vigil for and a memorial service for George Floyd in Ghana. Now, George Floyd is obviously not Ghanaian. This happened in Minnesota, but Ghanaians recognized it, and the government of Ghana organized a memorial service on behalf of George Floyd. And I'm also an activist. I'm part of an organization in Ghana called Economic Fighters League, and we did organize a vigil for George Floyd, and also for other victims of police brutality. Even in Ghana, there was a gentleman called Eric Ofochu, and then there was Ahmed Swale, who was brutalized, and then there's the Takoradi girls who were kidnapped. And so when we start to spread the message that Black lives matter everywhere, not just in the United States, but all over, and we mobilize and we come together as a people to fight these injustices, I feel like we are stronger in making a stance, and also ensuring that change occurs. But if we are to work as individually, so the Americans, African Americans work to solve the American problem, Zimbabweans work to solve the Zimbabwean problem, South Africans work to solve, and then we leave each other and fight our own battles individually. Historically, Africans were defeated because of division. And so coming together is, I feel, is probably the only solution, or the best solution available to solve some of these problems, because we've been fighting for so long, and we've made some progress, but we have a very, very long way to go in this process of trying to end racism, systemic racism, discrimination globally.
Well, I thank you. That's a very meaty answer. And I think some people might struggle to follow, but I really do follow, and I'm going to help bring it home, because people will be wondering, how is solving Africa's problem going to help systemic racism over here? But and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you're saying is, if we can become a people who who aren't the laughing stock of the world anymore.
Yeah.
Then basically
we will be respected and treated differently, definitely.
Exactly. In a nutshell. Yeah. And that's very interesting. I don't think I've necessarily put the two together that way. I don't think I would have answered it that way, but it's a very there's something to be said of that. So thanks for also bringing that different angle to the conversation. And I think there is a whole move going on in the diaspora. I think one of the most beautiful things I've noticed, you know, coming to the UK, and you see it all over the world, African, you stop becoming Ghanaian. It doesn't mean I Ghana or anything like that. Like, I absolutely love, you know, my heritage, but then you become African. Do you know what I mean? It's so weird.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel when you're in your own country, I never really saw it that way. Do you know what I mean? You don't necessarily think the rest of Africa, like, oh, we're all one people, or, you know, but coming here has really helped that. And I know a lot of other people can testify. So that is, that's awesome. And yeah, we'll continue to pray into that and hope to see things change. Now, look, we could go on forever, but I'm going to kind of, let's bring this to an end and start rounding up in terms of, because I don't like to speak of Black History Month in just negative terms, because there's some really amazing Black people in the past, now, do you know what I mean, who are doing some crazy, crazy amazing stuff. If you were to choose one person, I don't know, who's your favorite, past or present, figure?
Figure, wow. That's a tough one. Can I pick more than one?
One isn't fair, is it?
One isn't fair.
No, go for one. Try. What comes to mind?
Would you say the most inspirational figure?
You choose. Choose who you want, and then you can tell me whether it's because they inspire you or because of something else.
Well, on a personal level, I would say Bob Marley. And what the impact his music has made in our society. And his music is timeless and it's borderless, and anybody can relate to Bob Marley all over. He was the kind of person, figure, who brought people together. So Bob Marley will definitely be on the top of my list as far as huge inspirations as well. And he was influenced by some great minds, like the Honorable Messiah Garvey, Marcus Garvey, as well, in his teachings and his Pan-Africanist belief system. So I would say Bob Marley if I had to choose one. And if you permit me to choose one more, I have some more in mind, or at least I have one more in mind.
Okay, can you give me someone present then, someone who's still alive? Because I like to acknowledge heroes while they're still living, you know.
Well, I would say Patrick Lumumba. He's a Kenyan lawyer and a huge inspiration on the message of Pan-Africanism. And he's a very prominent lawyer in Kenya. And he is ensuring that there's change in the system, the political system in Kenya, and ending corruption. He's a huge inspiration for me.
That's amazing. Thank you for bringing some names to light. That's good to know. And I think it's Patrick Lumumba. I'm just writing his name down because I want to do more research.
Patrick Lumumba. Yeah. PLO. They call him PLO Lumumba.
And what's some of the work he's doing right now on the continent?
Well, I mean, he's written some books. He's a great orator, so he speaks in different countries, you know, different places, but it's mostly legal work. He did have some sort of like political stint at some point, but his biggest thing is teaching. He's a professor, he teaches, not only in the classroom, but on social media. He's inspiring a lot of Africans to do great things, to come out, to educate ourselves. And I'm talking about political education, not just not just the traditional form of education. He's doing amazing work. And you could tie that to also activism. He's doing a whole lot. He's doing so much. Not only in Kenya, he's definitely, you know, a groundbreaking figure to me.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for bringing names to light. And yeah, there are some amazing people doing amazing things, and you're one of them. So thank you so much for what you're doing as well.
Thank you for having me, Amy.
Sorry?
Thank you for having me, Amy.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for making the time. And yeah, guys, I'm sure you've absolutely enjoyed this. We thought we'll do something in honor of Black History Month in the States, because over 50% of my listeners actually come from the States. So I thought it would be quite good to do this and to be relevant in their timeline. So I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Do let us know your thoughts, Ahinkra. I just wish you all the best in
Thank
your
you.
Endeavor. And before you go, could you just leave us with some final words of encouragement, just to bring it all to an end in terms of your journey as an entrepreneur and everything. What would you leave as parting words for us?
Well, I'll say make sure you find your purpose and stick to it, and don't give up. You know, keep fighting in what you believe in. And hopefully one day all your hard work will come to light, and you will be celebrated, you'll be celebrated, even if not globally, you'll be celebrated in your small corner for the good work you've done, because you've lived according to your life's purpose.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amy.
Wishing you all the best.
You as well. Bye.
There you have it, guys, a truly amazing and inspirational conversation on some really current hot topic issues. Look, get over to my Instagram page or my Facebook page at Today Uncovered and let me know what you think. Like I always say, you don't have to agree with me. You can disagree, but I just want to know your thoughts. Let's get a discussion going, right? That's how we learn. That's how we understand each other's opinions. So make sure you drop us a comment and let us know your thoughts on this particular episode. And for those of you who are itching to try the amazing Supreme Sauce, make sure you go searching on IG, which is Instagram, at AY_MIC. So that's AY_MIC. To get in touch with Ahinkra. And on YouTube, it is Mica Speciality Foods. Yeah, so I'll spell Mica for all of you. It's MICAH, Mica Speciality Foods. Now, if you just want to head over to their website and just find out what other lovely products they have going and when they might be coming to a store near you, make sure you check them out on www.micaspecialityfoods.com. Right. And very lastly, if you just want to get in contact with Ahinkra after you've tried that Supreme Sauce, just to say, guys, you are crazy amazing. The email address is micaspecialityfoods@gmail.com. So make sure you get in touch. Check out Supreme Sauce. I'm heading over there now to order mine off Amazon, get it shipped to the UK. Amazing. So make sure you do the same. And just remember, guys, you are amazing. There's greatness within you. And don't forget to shine today. Have a beautiful day.